Yeah, I'm talking to Maite. I'm very glad to have you at least on the phone. Normally you should have played end of March, so in some days in Germany, in Freiburg, at the Swamp Club. But as we all know, there was something in between called Corona. Really pity. So, yeah, how do you feel with this situation, and what does this mean for your career in general at the moment?
I think it's just a big question mark at this point. I don't think anyone really knows how long it's going to go or what is going to change after. I mean, I don't think people thought this was going to happen back, 6 months ago or 4 months ago, or even when we first started hearing about it. I don't think we expected that it was going to go this way and it was going to happen so quickly that our whole lives are kind of changed now. We don't know. I mean, Maita is a touring band. We were planning on spending almost all of the year 2020 on the road. That was our plan. If we took 2 years to record some albums and do less touring, and then we were like, okay, 2020 is the year of touring and playing as many shows as we can. And then this happened, and it completely changed all of that, of course. Like, we have no idea when. I mean, I think places are canceling summer shows now and just booking fall, and some places are even, canceling fall and just going straight to winter or next year. And I think we are happy, though, because we do have music to release between now and then. Our record's coming out soon, and we're happy that we get to give people something new, even if we're not going to be playing shows. And I think in the meantime, we're just trying to figure out how to keep offering something to people, some art, even though we can't actually perform it live, which is one of our favorite ways of connecting with people musically. So I think it's just trying to keep that connection alive.
Yeah. And do you have still hope? Are you waiting to play this year, or did you lost all hope?
For this year? I mean, I guess I've kind of lost hope for this spring and summer, at least. But I'm not really like losing hope for the long term. I think I'm just trying to stay okay with what happens, just because I know that I'm confident that there's going to be a day within the next year where the live shows begin to happen again. And I'm just trying to tell myself that, 6 months or however long it takes, it's not that long in the grand scheme of things. And I know that a lot of places are concerned that, if they just book something in the summer, it'll just get canceled. And so I know that a lot of places, just to be secure and safe, are just looking as far ahead as they can to know that something will not get canceled. I mean, even Maita, I think we're looking at coming back to Europe. We don't know when yet, but definitely not until after the summer, and probably not until after the fall. But I'm trying not to see it as a completely bad thing. I mean, I think it's a chance to keep writing music and keep practicing guitar and keep working on things to build the sound so that when we do come back, it's better than it would have been.
Yeah.
I guess.
So you can work on new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you can maybe go on tour with two records at once.
Yeah, maybe. It's possible. Hopefully it's not that long. But it's definitely we have plenty of songs, and that's the good thing. We have a lot of music.
So you live in Portland. It's really, there's mm-hmm. a really active cultural scene, lots of bands. Are you connected mm-hmm. with other bands? And are you, is there solidarity?
Yeah. There's a lot of solidarity with bands right now in Portland, and I mean, there's like 10,000 songwriters in Portland, and we're friends with so many of them that I think maybe we were feeling the seriousness of this all even before it hit the rest of Portland, because we all had our shows canceled. Every single artist had to cancel shows long before we were ordered to stay home, before we were ordered to close the restaurants and the bars. The shows all got canceled first. And so I think that the musicians in town have been dealing with this issue for just a couple more days before everyone. And I think, you know, we were all kind of panicking at first. And I think a lot of us still are, because it's just unknown what's going to happen. But I think that there's a lot of solidarity. There's a lot of virtual concerts. A lot of artists are pushing each other's music and trying to make sure that people are listening to independent artists. And it's a cool thing. It's good to have that support group right now. The other side of that, though, is that a lot of artists in Portland no longer have any way of making money or have a job. And a lot of artists between tours, they pay for their rent and their bills by working in restaurants and bars, and those are all closed. So I think it just kind of hit the same group of people twice, this virus, mm-hmm. because artists can't play shows and they can't.
There are a lot of online streaming concerts at the moment. Mm-hmm. Are you planning such mm-hmm. things as well?
We are. We're planning on it. I think we're just trying to wait a little bit just to make sure that we can do it, have a good concert to offer. And it's a little tricky because our band, we can't all be together right now because of the quarantine and the lockdown. Mm-hmm. So it might have to be an acoustic show. We were really looking forward to coming to Europe with the rock band, because we've been a few times acoustic. And this was going to be different about this tour, is we were going to have a full rock band, and it was going to be more energy, and that's not really possible right now. We can't really do a virtual concert with the full band, especially since a lot of the concerts are have to live streamed over cell phones, and that's just not very good quality to capture all the sound. So we'll do some concerts. I think we're also trying to think of like live videos and other things to share in the meantime. But we're planning on it still. Yes, we're planning.
Cool. Yeah, let me know. Maybe we can stream it as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so now let's come to the world before Corona. let's come to your music. So is it true that you only perform on stage since 2 years, but you make music a lot, much longer, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I started playing music when I was in high school and didn't really gain the confidence to say, okay, I want to do this professionally until college. And then I had to finish school. So it wasn't until, around 2015 that I started to play out a lot. And then it was only 2 years ago that we started the band and really started playing with the full band. And we did a lot of acoustic shows before that. So this is just kind of the new chapter has only been about 2 years. We made the decision to not play as many shows during that time, just so that we could work on the record. And as I said before, like this next year was going to be the year that we toured a lot. So, but that's kind of the journey we've taken so far.
Hmm. And are you excited when you go on stage?
Yeah. Yeah, just in general. Oh, yeah, it's my
maybe
favorite.
Other people.
Yeah.
And how do you cope with that?
I think performing live on stage is my favorite way of sharing music. I think that it's when I'm the most comfortable, and it's funny because talking between songs, like when we talk to audiences from the stage, that is really hard for me, and I'm not as comfortable doing that. But then the moment it becomes just music, it just feels like a really comfortable way to express myself And it's really the only way that I feel like I'm able to connect with a large group of people at once. My favorite way of connecting with people is in very small groups. And so it's kind of cool to tap into this way of connection that I think was not possible for me before I started playing music. And just being able to feel the energy of dozens or hundreds of people at once together doing one thing, I think that's a really beautiful experience. And I think it's something that we're going to really, really appreciate once we get through this.
Yeah, I just remember another artist who said that for him, the hardest thing to play live is in front of only one person.
Mm-hmm.
So because the critique, yeah, there's only this one person who judges, and maybe it's more easy to play in front of thousands of people. You don't have to look in the eyes, but when I get you right, you prefer to be a bit cozy and near and close to people.
I do when I'm talking. I think when I'm communicating, like just in conversation, I prefer one or two people. And then with music, that's when it completely changes and it becomes, it's just a very open and extroverted thing that I can do that I don't have that desire to be with a bunch of people at once doing this one thing and sharing this one connection. And so that's what's special about music for me. And it is really hard to play a show for just one person. I think it's really hard because when it's just one person, like if that person stops listening or gets bored, then your audience is gone. And then, but with a big group of people, there's just some security that we're all in it together. And at least even if you're reaching just one person who wants you to keep playing, it's worth it. So, yeah.
So let's talk a bit about your latest or the new record, Best Wishes. Best Wishes sounds like a farewell. So is it about saying goodbye to someone?
So Best Wishes, the last song on the record, which isn't released yet, it was kind of about saying goodbye to a city that was it wasn't dying, but it was changing to the point where it felt like the city had died, just because I don't know if this, I'm sure it's a problem in Germany too, or in Austria, or just everywhere in Europe, but any city that is, I don't know, when it starts to become popular, like a lot of people move there and then it becomes too expensive for the people who used to live there, who still live there, and then they have to leave or they have to say goodbye to what they used to call their home because it's changed so much. And so that happens a lot in the West Coast, in particular in the US. Mm-hmm. And so it happened in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It was happening in Portland. It is happening in Portland. And the last song on the record is kind of about that, like saying goodbye to a city. And I also I liked the title of Best Wishes because it kind of, a lot of my songs are not always just purely good wishes. Like there's sometimes little things in there that are not happy or not always the kindest thing. And I think I liked this idea of using that phrase because it kind of was like this tongue-in-cheek, like ironic sort of word phrase that like I like it might seem like they're all good wishes, but sometimes there's a couple things in there that are not, and I think that's how life is. So that's where the name came from.
So you could also say, instead of best wishes, you could say fuck off.
Yeah.
Because you're too expensive for me now, so I have to leave.
Yeah, that's true. That could be the alternative title. Not in the US though, no radio station would be ever able to say the name of my album. Yeah.
Okay, so it's political, isn't it? I thought it would be, just be about relationships and stuff. But it's interesting.
There are a couple. I mean, I think that it can apply to a lot of the songs, and there are a few about. There's a few songs about relationships on the album, and I think that's the other thing is like when we write about relationships, they're often not always happy, and not always just good things about the relationship. But at the end of the day, like, I don't know, you want to wish good things for people, but it doesn't always happen that way. So I don't know. I guess it's just like kind of this idea of me wanting to have the best intentions for people and the best feelings towards people, and that doesn't always happen. And I thought that the title kind of captured that for all of the songs.
So even if there's no reason to be optimistic, you just sent best wishes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it feels kind of appropriate right now too. I mean, we're going to put the album out during this quarantine time and during the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. A lot of the songs, when I listen back to them, even though they were not written with this in mind, of course, I feel like it kind of makes sense, like saying goodbye to a city, like we're all saying goodbye to the cities that we knew right now. Mm-hmm. There's a few songs on the album about like struggling to pay for things as an artist, and that's really, everyone's feeling that right now as artists. And yeah, I think it kind of amplified a lot of the things that we were already experiencing in some strange way. And I think the album actually fits really well for the time.
Yes, and the song "I'm Afraid of Everything" as well.
Yeah, definitely that one too. Yeah. So,
but I wanted to talk about another song. So about this relationship song, "Darling, Don't Take Me When You're Ready to Go."
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's about a relationship. You should better quit or end.
Oh.
But nobody.
Nobody actually.
Does it?
Yeah. This one actually does feel even like it. So there's this event, this historical event in the U.S. called the Dust Bowl. Have you heard of it?
No.
So basically, the Dust Bowl, gosh, I don't remember when it happened, but basically, like, there was a big depression because, like, I was reading this book about it, and basically, in the U.S., everyone farmed a lot, which caused all of the soil to lose all of its nutrients, and then all the grass stopped growing. And maybe I'm not getting this totally right, but basically there was a really, really hard time in history when nothing was growing, dust was blowing everywhere, a lot of people died, a lot of people starved to death. It was a really hard time. It was very apocalyptic. And then in the middle of that, I read this line in this historical book about it, about this man and this husband and wife. And it was just one line about this husband who killed his wife and then killed himself because he couldn't face the future of the apocalypse and of all the hardship that was coming. So I wrote this song kind of as like a feminist song about this woman. It's from the woman's perspective, and like her decision was made for her by her husband that they would not try to survive this apocalypse. And I just was wondering about her, and maybe she would have been okay. And so, "Darling, Don't Take Me When You're Ready to Go," which is the chorus, is kind of about a woman saying like, you know, I like, this is my decision, and I like, you might be ready to go, but I'm not. And I like, there's a life that I can have without you. I guess it's kind of like dark and dramatic, and maybe that also applies nowadays.
We don't hope so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I don't think it'll go that bad, sadly. No, I don't.
You mentioned feminism, and it's interesting because, in, for example, Japanese Waitress, maybe this is as well a kind of feminist song or topic, so it's about gender roles and racism as well. So you used to work as a waitress, didn't you? So have these been your experiences that time?
Yeah. I mean, everything in the song, it was a really easy song for me to write in terms of the words, just because every single thing in the song just really, it just happened. Like I was, and then I had a shift that was really slow, and I just wrote everything down during my shift on the paper that you take the orders on. And it just wrote itself. And there were so many more stories that I could have told, and I just didn't, because there was not enough room in the song. And the thing is, like, a lot of the stuff that happened in it, it's a lot of small things that are just symptoms of a larger issue. And I think because of that, like, pretty much anyone, any server, any waitress can relate to this, to moments of this song. And I think add to that this element of like objectification and fetishism that can happen also with like with Japanese women, and being like, I'm half Japanese, and I think that's something that I have noticed as well. And it can be so subtle that it's like not often seen as a huge issue, but I think it's something that I definitely noticed a lot more when I was working in the restaurant, and just wanted to touch upon that, because it's, like I said, it's a very subtle thing, and I felt like it was something that wasn't represented very often.
What are the racist stereotypes towards Japanese people, or especially Japanese women? So do they always have to smile, for example?
Well, at our restaurant, so first of all, we all had to wear kimonos. The men didn't, the women did. We all wore like kimonos, which took like 10 to 15 minutes to put on every day. And there's like 12 to 15 pieces of clothing that you just put on your body, and then you go work a really busy shift. But which like already is just like, we have to look the part and look really, really like perfect. And even though it was very hard to serve in that outfit, it was like, we were expected to then also work as quickly and as efficiently as we could, even though like you can't really breathe very well. It's really hot. You can't move very well. You're wearing these like sandals. And then I think like there was this understanding that of like the way that we were supposed to serve, and how we were just supposed to be very like always the most polite and always the most understanding. And I think people would often respect that and respect us, but I think that there was like sometimes there was just this undercurrent of like expectation that we were always just supposed to be polite, and that we weren't, that there was nothing like nothing else, that like we couldn't really advocate for ourselves, and we had to just, I don't know. I mean, it's also part of being a server. It's just the job of being a server, but there's like a small undercurrent when, I don't know, when you're just dressed up in this very traditional Japanese outfit, and people kind of like, there's these like images floating in their mind of like, oh, a geisha, or oh, like, which kind of suggests like something else. And like we're meant to entertain people as well, or we're meant to compliment people. And like my boss would tell us that we were supposed to compliment people and make sure that we give people attention and make sure that we give all the tables equal attention, so none of the tables get jealous and stuff like that, which was just, it's just a weird thing to have to think about as a server.
What's the idea behind the video clip? So we see you maybe coming home after work, tired and ready for fast food dinner. So what's the idea?
So that the video is just supposed to be like the day after day, like every day, coming home from work and having these stories to tell every single day, no matter what season it is, no matter, like, you get home from work and like, this is what you do, is you come home with these moments of what happened. And it's, like I said, it's just like my mom grew up, or my mom all while I was growing up, was a waitress. And so I just remember this moment, like from my entire life, of someone coming home from their job at a restaurant and then just being completely tired and drained, and then having to feed yourself after you spent all night feeding other people, and then just needing to talk about what happened, like anything that happened on your shift that was hard. The way the video is, there's like a few different seasons and outfits just to kind of show that this isn't just something that happens once. It's something that you deal with every single day working.
So maybe in the end, let's talk about the opener, A Beast. So I've read it's about forgiveness and that forgiveness can be dangerous. Why?
Yeah. Well, okay. So I guess this one is really about relationships. And it's kind of this idea that, like in relationships, often there's a point where one person hurts the other person, and that can all either be the end of the relationship, or people can forgive and move on and just try to hold on to it, despite whatever happened. And I think that it takes a lot of strength to do this, but it does come at a cost sometimes, which is that, like you might forgive someone, but you're not going to fully recover sometimes from whatever wrong that was done to you. And that's something that you remember and you hold inside of you, even though you aren't talking about it, or you're not upset about it anymore. But it's still there. It's like, and the way the chorus is, like talking about a dog, you know, like if you meet a dog that was abused or was hurt or was rescued from someone and you don't know its past, and like some dogs, like if you like raise your hands to pet it, it kind of like gets down and like tries to walk away, or like lowers its head, like because it's scared that it's going to get hit. And that's, you know, like the dog might love you, but it remembers this thing that it like involuntarily still like holds in its body, is this reaction. And so that's kind of what I wanted to capture in the song as well, is you might forgive someone and recover from something, but the memory of it is still inside of you.
So forgiveness is nothing you can decide. You just have to feel it.
Yeah, you have to feel it. And you can't always, like, even if you decide to forgive, you can't, like the song, like, you can't always forget it. Like, it's, and that's just a new reality in a relationship that you have to live with.
And what or who is the beast in the song?
I guess that would be the person who was hurt, the person who did the forgiving or is doing the forgiving. That's the beast.
Okay. So have you ever been a beast in your life?
Definitely a lot of, part of the song comes from personal experience, and there was just a period of time right around when I wrote the song where I ran into a few of these stories, it happened to be from women. There was just a cluster of these stories that all happened at once, and I just saw the connection and I was like, why is this happening? Like, this is a pattern. And that's where the song came from.
So, Maita, thank you so much for this conversation. It was a pleasure. I wish you all the best wishes for you. And I hope so much that you can go on touring and can come to Germany again. I really hope so.
Yes. So. I hope so, and I know I think it will happen.
Yeah.
I know
it will happen. Maybe with the second record then.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Bye.